Welcome back to another episode of the Better Events Podcast. In this week's episode, we are talking all about event scope creep, the good, the bad, the ugly. We are seriously looking forward to talking about this. We have some real stories. You can learn from our negative experiences in this one. So if you are curious about event scope creep, what it is, and then how you can avoid it, this is going to be a great episode for you. So here we go.
Welcome to the Better Events Podcast. Join two event strategists, Logan Clements and Mary Davidson, who believe we can all create, host, and attend better events. In this podcast, you will learn about event strategy and actions that you can use today as an event host, planner, or manager. Hear directly from the people who are creating innovative and inspiring events today and tomorrow, and grow your business along the way. Now, let's get started, and thanks for listening to the Better Events Podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the Better Events Podcast. I'm Logan Clements, one of your co-hosts. I'm joined by my fellow co-host, Mary Davidson. And this week, we are talking about something so ominous, so serious, and yet so crucial for event professionals everywhere. Sorry, Mary, I couldn't keep a straight face. We are talking about, event scope creep. The good, the bad, and the ugly. And don't worry, if you don't know what event scopes are, you don't know what event scope creep is, we're going to talk about that from the start. But if you are an event planner, producer, professional, even a vendor, this is a very important conversation that we're about to have. And I'm really fired up to have this conversation, Mary, because this is an episode that younger me totally wishes I would have heard. But before we jump into it, I do have an icebreaker for you. Have you ever been told you look like someone famous? And if so, who was it?
Oh, so I don't think I have been told that in my adult life. Now, if you're not sure, everybody, please pull up our YouTube or Spotify video podcast and tell me. I, though, when I was little, was told often that I look like Shirley Temple. And if you want to see little Mary, you can look at Better Events Pod Gmail. And in October, we posted our Halloween costumes from when we were little. And that's where you can experience
our Instagram.
That.
Yeah, look at our Instagram. Yes.
Yes. And on our Instagram, yes. And so as an adult, no, but I will say that I am a Gemini. So apparently I do have a twin out there. But what about you?
Mine also would be from childhood. My mom now tells me this because I have no memory of it. But that supposedly I looked like Drew Barrymore from E.T. I have like the widow's peak, slightly larger forehead, but I guess as a small child with my little, like my curls, I looked like Drew Barrymore. And I had somebody, this reminded me of this question because I had someone like a couple months ago ask me that. And then they were like, yeah, I could see Drew Barrymore. I was like, wait, really? No?
Okay. I think I can see it.
Well, like an adult.
Yeah.
Thank you. But as a small child, so everyone thought right out of E.T., Drew Barrymore in I think she was an E.T. I'll be embarrassed if that's not true, but yeah. Straight out of E.T. They all thought that was me when I was a kid.
Good question. Now I'm going to think about this. Yeah. So please reach out to us and let us know who you think we look like. I would be curious to know. Or we'll have to take one of those quizzes. This is like an online quiz you can take. So anyway, great question. So we are now going to dive into our topic, event scope, the good, the bad, the ugly. And we just have so much to say about this. So we're going to go ahead and dive right into it. So Logan, what's event scope? First of all, not creep, just what is an event scope?
I feel like before we can talk about the creep, we got to talk about what the event scope is and how we use it in events. So your event scope, or maybe you could have heard this talked about as your SOW, which is a scope of work. Scope, fully said, a scope of work, but it really is just kind of a list of your roles and responsibilities or services that you are offering to your client. So again, this applies to anybody, not just planners and producers. This could be a florist, catering, a venue. It's whatever document you're using that says, here are the things that you are contracting me. It could even be your contract, but usually in a contract, there's a scope of work that says, here's what I'm going to do. And here's what you as the client are going to do. And the way you use it is it's your North Star for your contract with this person and the services you're providing. It gives you a document that shows you have hired me to do what is said on the scope of work. And I know some people, maybe if you're first getting started, you don't use scopes of work. It's kind of more of a gentleman's agreement or, you know, an unofficial agreement of, oh, I'm going to help you with your event. I still encourage you to get some kind of bulleted, here's what I'm going to do. Because if you don't, you're going to be a victim of scope creep. So I feel like I covered. Mary, how else would you define it? Did I miss anything when it comes to event scope and how we use it?
No, I think you defined it really well. And I'm just really excited to talk about it. I'm trying to hold back on some comments already. So I think that's it for now.
All right. And then how we define like scope creep, I'll take a stab at this first, Barry, and then you can follow it up. But how I personally define scope creep is anytime that you're not then following the scope, or maybe you said you were going to do event planning and now they want you to do the event marketing and you didn't list that on your event scope as something they were doing or you were doing. So it's called creep because essentially you're getting asked for more things often than are what was included in your scope of work. You're getting asked to do additional tasks that were not in your original scope of work. And sometimes this falls, I feel like planners fall victim to this because as planners or event planners, event producers, event managers, we have a very broad title. And so the client's interpretation of what you said you're going to do as the event planner, the wedding planner, the event manager, they would assume that certain things would be in there. And so to them, it's not scope creep. It's just, this is your job. But this is where your event scope is so crucial because it does give you a document to go back and say, no, these weren't the thing, you know, you've asked me to do this. That's definitely something I can do, but we do need to revisit because it's not in the scope of work. And it's really hard to have those conversations. So that's why we're going to have this episode today for Mary and I to kind of talk about how we handle scope creep, because it will happen. Mary, how do you define scope creep?
Yeah, I mean, really similarly, it's just to me, like if I'm tying the definition to an emotion, it is when you're working an event and you're like, wait a minute, this is taking a lot of time and I feel like I wasn't prepared for this. Like that's the moment when I'm like, wait a minute, what happened? And that to me is scope creep. So it's like a feeling, it's a bad feeling that I think we both experienced a lot.
Yeah, I think that's nail on the head right there. It's you often, the impact of event scope creep and why I made those ominous sounds at the start of this episode was because often you don't feel great afterward. You as the service provider, you as the vendor, the planner, the event pro, you don't feel great about it because there was that scope creep. So Mary, how do you like to handle scope creep?
Well, I think for me, scope creep really differs based on if it is my client or if I'm working for somebody else. So if it's my client, and I've learned this, is to really make crystal clear contracts. So like I have my scope listed in the contract. I list out specifically exactly each service that I'm going to provide. And I say, you know, I have a lot of disclaimers like anything above and beyond this will be billed at this hourly rate, which of course I'll first, you know, tell the client this isn't in my scope and then I will bill it at the hourly rate. But just trying to make it crystal clear on what I am providing. So that's what I've learned to do in the contracts. And that has been helpful for me. I will say it sometimes takes it's a learning curve for the clients themselves. Cause when I have a discovery call with them, I ask them, like I have this list. I like basically interview them about their event and I tell them, all right, I have a lot of questions for you. So please bear with me. This is so I can create a custom proposal for you. And then I nail them with like a ton of questions. And I do that so that I can write out the scope super clearly. So I really try to understand exactly what their needs are. So it's complicated when they aren't sure of what their needs are. So then I'm like, okay, well, we need to figure this out because I'm not just going to start working on something and you don't know what you need, except for perhaps a gig that is hourly. And that actually is why I don't love hourly gigs, is because they always turn into something else. Like I don't know what I'm committing to when it comes to that. So I'll stop talking for now. Logan, what about you? How do you handle it?
Yeah, I think it's very similar to yours in that it's something, unfortunately, and that's why we'll share some tips as we go through and stories of things we've experienced, is you kind of have to learn the hard way. I think I've mentioned in earlier episodes, one of my favorite things to do is read venues, contracts and their scopes of work, because venues have great stories. And think every clause they've put into that contract is there's probably a story behind it because someone did it, or rules that you're not allowed to do is because someone's done it and they've learned the venue learned the hard way. They have to explicitly spell it out in the contract. I'm not a venue, I'm just a planner. But this is something that my scope of work I've learned is so important to nail down exactly, like Mary's saying, when I do project-based, if my service is project-based, meaning I'm just charging a flat fee for that service, you really need to nail down on exactly what's included in your service. And this is the same as if you were, you know, if someone's hiring you to cater a dinner versus if they hire you to cater a very specific, I want steak, I want some potato, you know, potatoes, because the cost could be very different and the expectations of the client are very different. So it really helps everybody, helps me make sure I deliver everything, helps the client make sure that they're happy. So like Mary's list of questions, I love that. That's such a great, helpful tool for doing that. I think for me, handling scope creep, my scope has really become my scope of work, my Bible that I'm using with my events. And I do have a section, not only do I list out my responsibilities, but this is something that I'd learned from another event pro. I have a client list of responsibilities in my scope of work as well, so that I clearly have things that are not included on my list are included on their list. And that doesn't mean that the client has to do it. They're responsible for finding someone to do that. So like something we talk about here, I feel like, is marketing always gets forgotten. Some clients I've worked with in the past have asked me to handle the marketing. So then it's in my part of the scope, but other times they're handling it. And I found by having that determined list, I have a document I can go back and say, hey, you know, we talked about this. You were going to have someone to monitor the chat for the event. If that's something you can't provide, I'm happy to, you know, scope that out for you. If I feel like it's a client that hasn't been maybe as, hasn't needed me as much as I thought, sometimes I can be nice and throw that in. But what I found is the scope is like your tool to kind of fight back against scope creep. And the hard part is there's some clients out there I've realized that probably have dealt with event professionals who haven't pushed back on scope creep. So they just assume they can get whatever they're asking for at no additional cost, or, you know, you're just going to say yes. And that is really hard to push back against. And it's always easier said than done. But I found that there's some that I'm like, oh, there must've been a lot of people you've worked with in the past who just said yes to every idea you had without first saying, wait, this is an additional ask, you know, it's going to cost XYZ. And that just makes everybody's lives harder. So that helps me motivate me to have those difficult conversations sometimes, because nobody likes talking about money or added costs or things like that. But to me, I'm like helping future me and future other people by being like, hey, sorry, actually, you know, that's a great idea. I could definitely do it, but it's going to cost X, or I need this much more resources.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because like sometimes as an event professional, you have to decide whether you're going to let something creep into the scope. Like, cause sometimes it's worth it. And I think like what I mean by that for me specifically, like there is an event that I'm a part of and it's local to my target market and my ideal clients. And so that event, I've worked on it previously, often has scope creep, and it's a flat rate that I'm charging them. So I'm not gaining anything, you know, monetarily wise by doing more, but it's like as target as my market could be, like that is it. And so, and I enjoy working with the people. So it's hard because like, if I have any scope creep on that event, to me, it's justified. That doesn't mean I like want to set myself up for that, but like I can deal with it. Whereas some other events, especially if they are more difficult clients, it's like, no, we need it. I'm going to cut this off right now because I'm going to get taken advantage of if I don't make something crystal clear right now. So you just have to also really, I think, fill it out. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, Logan, because obviously scope creep isn't great for anybody, but sometimes it might be justified.
Yeah. And I want to save that for the end. I feel like, cause so we can end on a high note of just kind of, cause there are cases where it's good. And that's why this is the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'd love to dive into first. Yeah. Kind of the bad side or the ugly side. Just in my head that just, it's getting worse.
Yeah.
And like one example that I would use is if you're being asked by a client to do something that you don't know how to do, your instinct as like a hospitality event professional might be to say yes, because you want to be that positive resource for your client, but it actually could hurt you in the long run if you don't know what you're doing. And now you've said, yes, I can do this. And I've witnessed this at events where people have essentially taken on more than they could, whether it's just sheer time or a very intricate skill that you didn't know how to do. Another event planner podcast I listened to that's about weddings was talking about the pitfalls of wedding planners trying to also like do florals and like make extra money, but then they forget about how much time it takes, and just getting the raw materials is expensive for flowers. And, you know, it ended up then taking away from their planner, you know, their time, their brain could think about the planning thing. So like, that's a part where that event scope creep, you know, probably you thought was going to be beneficial, but it actually, you know, hurt you in the long run. And so that's just one that I would really think about when you're being asked to do something, because I think Mary's example there was a good sign. Then there are rational reasons that we can talk about more, but it's really just thinking about, are they asking, the bad would be asking for more than you're able to do. And if you feel pressured to say yes, you know, that's a situation where you should definitely ask for help.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think it is important that we do focus on like the bad and the ugly of it first, because in most cases it's not good. Like if some like young aspiring event professional came up and asked if scope creep was good or bad, I'd be like, no, stay away. Like it's bad. So there, it's definitely not. Yeah. There's definitely lots of bad to it. Can we take a moment to talk about working with agencies? So when we get hired on as a staff, maybe it's like white labeled. So a lot of times we just come in as the agency, and I am Mary from such and such agency, because we're part of the team. So in those scenarios, what do you have to say, Logan?
How do I handle it?
We could say, yeah, how do you handle it?
Well, one, I do would acknowledge that as an event professional, especially a planner, producer, or I think other vendors, there's a lot of opportunity to be made if you're able to work with agencies. And whether it's like Mary saying you're white labeled as I'm Logan from X agency, that's great. There's a lot of opportunity there because those bigger agencies can often get bigger clients and bigger projects that you're not going to get as an individual. So there is opportunity there. The hard part that I've seen where scope creep happens is often that the event professional thinks that the agency is going to have their best interest at heart and just blindly kind of is like, with very little information, no defined scope per se, but just saying, hey, we need to bring you on as a producer. And you say yes. And then the agency takes advantage of you and your time, because that's the hard part. And one of the reasons I don't work full-time at an agency is they are very demanding and they work on these big projects and big budgets, but with big projects and big budgets come big client expectations. And they often want access for a lot of your time at weird hours, maybe even, and just not having those boundaries. And what I found that I've gotten burned because I have gone in, I've been that event professional who said, oh, this is a great opportunity. These guys have so much confidence in me. They're going to ask me to be a producer for this project. I'm so excited. Yes, I'll say yes. And they've given me maybe one sentence about what I'm doing at the event, and then slowly trickling information in, being like, oh, by the way, you're managing this, or by the way, can you chase this? You're in charge of PowerPoints. Oh, and this person and that person. And it all of a sudden becomes this much larger thing than you'd ever imagined, which I think if you have tons of time, you're going to be like, wow, Logan, that's a great, I can't wait to do all this work. But often like we're working on multiple projects at once. And so I've often gotten burned that it has been a more time consuming job than I had thought, because I assumed, and there's the lovely phrase that we just don't want to make assumptions about things, because I've learned now there's literally no dumb questions. I might assume, we talk about lingo on this podcast too, of saying, when you say producer, I think it means this, but wait, for you, does it mean I do this? And so it's something that I've learned the hard way, where I've gotten caught in some very aggressive scope creep, whether it was being asked to do things that I didn't think were under my purview, or just being asked to be on calls at very odd times of day, and all encompassing, again, because I didn't have anything written down. And so one of the ways I'm currently working with it is all my direct clients, I have that scope of work that we talked about at the top of this episode, where I have clearly, here's what you do, here's what I do. And I rarely have to deal with scope creep with those folks. Often I like to think I'm attracting the right clients who like me, and then I'm doing a good job with managing them, but probably also I'm just attracting the right people. But it's something with agencies I found's gotten really out of hand sometimes. And so this is something I now have made a version of my scope of work, my SOW, that I actually have crafted now for an agency. And that's something moving forward as I work with these other groups, they might give me a sentence and say, are you available? And I'll say, I believe so. Let me ask you a couple of questions, not as robust, I think, as Mary, as your system, but let me send you a scope of work to make sure I'm understanding everything that you want from me. And that's been a really good exercise that I just started implementing in the last couple of months to make sure that I'm on the same page as them of what the time expectations, roles and responsibilities are. But it is always easier said than done, and only something that I'm like five and a half years in right now that yeah. I feel confident enough to try that.
Well, Logan, I actually learned this more from you when it comes to agencies, because that list that I mentioned that I asked, those are of my clients, but not of agencies. And so, and I remember you shared this with me because I wrote it down, and you said there are some more specific questions you ask of agencies. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm like quoting you right now, but you asked them, is it time-based or task-based? And then you asked, what time zone is everybody in? Because, oh my gosh, we just work so many Eastern time zone events and we're Pacific time, and that can be a killer sometimes.
the and beauty, like, and the curse of virtual that I've learned. I know. That is, it's very cool that you can work with people no matter where they are. But yes, those are two of my questions that are on my kind of like questionnaire questions that I'll walk through before I create my scope of work. And the task versus time, I'm so proud of that one, because that really has been a pain point with scope creep, where I've gone back and gone, how did I get it so wrong? How was I so not prepared to understanding? Like, I was able to do the job and I feel like I did a good job, but how was I personally not, you know, surprised at what they were asking of me? And I go, yeah, is it time-based or task-based? And what I mean by that is time-based, like, do I need to be on a call at 9 a.m. Pacific every single day? Or I have to be on a couple calls every week and I need to make sure I move all other projects and things away from that so I can make those calls? Or is it task-based where it's like, hey, Logan, we have, you know, we have all these things that we need to do in the 6 weeks leading up to the event. We just need to hit this one 5 weeks out, this thing 4 weeks out. So I could do it at 8 a.m. I could do it at 8 p.m. at night. I could do it on the weekend if I really wanted to. Like, there's more flexibility there. And that's something that, again, I assumed when people are hiring a contractor or a freelancer or an outside employee for something, that they would understand that. But I've just learned the hard way that that assumption's not always true.
Yeah, definitely. And if we're talking about, you know, all of these are tips for you listening. So hopefully you don't get as burned as we have been. But you know, sometimes you got to live and you learn. But another kind of tip that I was thinking of is when you're talking to somebody you might be doing work for, and I guess this to me probably strongly applies to agencies, but perhaps in other scenarios as well, is when I'm talking to someone and I hear them talk about their lack of work-life balance. I hear them complain about how late they have to work tonight, or talk about how they are checking emails at 2 a.m. or just things like that. I'm like, red flag, red flag, red flag. Do I want to be a part of this? Because almost every time when that happens, scope creep also occurs for my role. And so hopefully that's helpful. Keep your ears out for comments like that.
I think so. And I mean, this is coming from where Mary and I right now are in our lives and our businesses. Cause I think there's also some folks, if you're, you know, young and hungry and really just want to get in and that's the job you found and it's a way to get experience quickly, like, there's nothing wrong with, you know, embracing that. But I'm with you, Mary, that it's, if any kind of scope creep that I felt that's really gets into that ugly category is often because the values of the agency or the client or whoever I'm working for directly don't align with kind of the values. And I guess we should say boundaries. We should say the B word, boundaries, that I apply to my business. And so when those things are in conflict, it just makes everything hard. Where, yeah, if someone's assuming you're going to be online immediately responding at 10 p.m. at night, is that the project you really want to work on? And if you're a night owl and listening to this, you'd be like, yeah, I don't, that's great, but I don't want to be on the 8 a.m. calls. That's great too. But it's just really important, I feel like, to help look out for yourself to make sure that you're drawing those, you understand what's expected of you, because it's only going to help you in the long run. And this is, again, not to like scare you away from working with agencies. There's a lot that I like working with. And I've just found by having this little more defined scope is just helping everybody, because we're all super crystal clear. We have something to go back to, just like my direct clients, that like, I can just say, oh yeah, here. Oh, that wasn't in my scope. Okay, we got to add it on. And I think, Mary, you made a really good point earlier too, talking about how it's different when it's an hourly based project. And that's something that with, I will say there's opportunity there, because if you have a difficult client and you're getting paid actually by the hours that you work and they ask you to work crazy hours, you do benefit from that. And that was, I had one project a couple years ago that really got kind of out of hand with hours and expectations from the client side. And the only thing really keeping me going at the weird hours was me knowing every single hour I was logging was going to be paid, versus when you do a project rate and you have a client who does that same thing, you know, that hurts. Like we said, it's that weird gut feeling where you're like, I feel like I, you know, the client got the good end of the deal, and you want both to be happy. Again, we talk about community over competition here. Like, it's not a zero sum game. It's not the client wins and you lose. It's like, you both should be winning. You both should feel good about the end product. You should feel like you were respected and worked hard and delivered and your client's really happy with the result. That's like how we should all feel. You should not feel completely drained and just tired because, you know, so they were able to kind of come out on top in some of these scenarios. And that's just something that I feel like I learned the hard way on a couple of projects. So I'm very happy we're talking about this on the podcast and hopefully helping listeners evaluate this. And this is also something to think about too, for like, if you're not a service-based industry and you're a product, physical products, I think it's a little bit easier to avoid scope creep because it's like you ordered 20 plates. I'm not going to give you 30 because you ordered 20 versus like a service can feel a little bit more, I know, not as tangible, right? You can't like hold it in your hands and say something like that. So it's just something that photographers, even like just making sure that you're really sticking to those scopes because it's just going to make everybody happy anyway. Mary, do you have any more tips or stories of how you learned the hard way with event scope creep?
I don't think so. Just it's a journey. So hopefully this isn't like too negative for those listening. We just hope you can benefit from our experiences. So share your stories about scope creep with us. I'd love to hear them.
Seriously. Yeah. Send us an email at bettereventspod@gmail.com. We would love to hear about your scope creep. And we want to end it on like a positive note. So talking about when event scope creep can be good. So Mary, you mentioned that one project that, you know, that's a welcomed thing. And I think we worked an event together that was back when pandemic kind of shut everything down. And then we were slowly starting to, you know, dip our toes into virtual. And we worked for an organization that we'd agreed on a scope. It was great. We were working through it. And as we realized, as we got into the working of it, we realized they needed a lot more help than they had thought. And so for us, it was actually good because it was, we had the time, we had the resources, and we really were invested in making it a success. So I feel like that was a good scope creep, but only made good because at the end, after the project, we were very transparent with the organization and said, hey, this is what we'd signed for scope, but here's what we actually did. And we compared the hours and we gave them actually, I think we gave them the raw hours and the cost that would have been associated and said, in future years, if you want to do what we did, most ourselves and other planners are probably going to charge you X. And so that was just helpful for them to understand like, oh yeah, and they appreciate it. They understood that we'd gone above and beyond what we said we wanted to do. And that has helped as a repeat client for them. They have better expectations of what we're doing versus they're doing. So that was scope creep, but I would quantify that as good scope.
Well, I like ending on a positive note. That's good. Yes. Yeah. Use your best judgment. Sometimes it's worth it or necessary, but
yeah. And I think one more before we wrap would be like good scope creep would also be if you're trying to prove yourself in a new service. And this is something we talked about. It is a negative of a scope creep, but I think if it really is something you're excited about and you want to do, and like maybe you've never done virtual events before and you want to take that on in addition to doing the in-person stuff or try to do hybrid, you know, it is an opportunity to prove yourself to a client that you really care about, but I would just be careful. It doesn't get taken advantage of because it is often really hard to backtrack in future years and charge for things that you did for free previously versus having that conversation. And my strategy for that would be if you get asked by a client to do something that, you know, they don't have the budget for, but you know, they need, and you want to be nice and you want to do it. You could, one option would be to say, yeah, I'm happy to do it, just to know in future years, it would cost X or it would add X to the scope, and just kind of call it out as soon as you can. So even though if you're not going to charge it for that first year, you're at least highlighting it and again, paying it to forward to future you and future other vendors so that the client knows this isn't just like a free add-on that you do. And you can always be super nice and just give them free add-ons, but just know that I feel like that's where event scope creep that's good can slowly start to turn bad.
Yeah. You want them to value you. So just reminding them of that. Love it. Oh, so many good nuggets. I feel like we could talk about this forever. So we'll just leave it at that for the day. And before we end, you know, we have our bonus tip. So Logan, I think you have our bonus tip today.
Yeah. This bonus tip is for any business owner out there. You can be freelance or officially have a business, but I encourage you to don't forget to grow your testimonials. So ask past clients to write you a Google business or a Facebook review, and then pull them for your website. This is something when I first started in business, I would ask people an email just to say, hey, can you send me a testimonial? And while those were great for my website and social media, I can't upload their testimonial from my email to Google or to Facebook, which those both really help with your SEO and are seen publicly. So I would encourage you to give clients both options. You can say, hey, you can send something to me privately, or share publicly via Google or Facebook. And I make it super easy. I like put both of the links in my email to the client. So they just have to click. I usually call out, like, if you don't mind taking 3 minutes to do this, it really helps you with SEO as well as just help other people find your business. Don't forget, and this is something that you can always go back to. You could do it in December and go back to all your clients that you worked with that year and ask them for testimonials because it'll just help you grow.
Love it, love it. Logan, I'm gonna leave you a testimonial.
Thanks, Mary. I will actually, that reminds me, you can also do LinkedIn. What are they called?
Recommendations.
Yeah.
Recommendations.
Recommendations yeah. for each other. That is something I've also seen if you're not a business, but just a professional. A couple of friends of mine, we all kind of who work together, done that for each other. And that's a great way to do it too.
You can also leave a testimonial for the podcast on the Apple Podcast app. Sorry, I just had to throw that in there. We love 5-star ratings. So please leave us one. But with that, I guess, thank you for listening to another episode of the podcast. You can reach out to us on social media as well at Better Events Pod. You can send us an email at bettereventspod@gmail.com. And one quick plug is you may have remembered from previous episodes that we hold a retreat called Event Pros on the Go. This is co-hosted with Jessica Tate. And last year we went to Key West, Florida. This year we're going to San Antonio, Texas, and we are looking for event professionals to join us. We do have a limited number of spots, but I wanted to call it out in this episode. If you're interested, please reach out to us at bettereventspod@gmail.com and I will get in contact with you with more information. If you didn't write down that email I just mentioned, you can find it in the show notes as well. So we'd love to hear from you. Please join us at the retreat. And thank you so much again for listening to another episode of the Better Events Podcast. We will be back with you next Wednesday.
Thanks, everybody.